Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The story of radiation in St. Louis is still changing. This month, the historic expansion of the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act followed decades of concern and, in the last 12 years or so, concerted efforts by residents who raised alarm at the spread of cancers in their families and neighborhoods. But it's not only recent developments changing that story. It's the past and new evidence published just hours ago that connects the presence of radiation-related cancer to a landmark scientific study conducted right here in St. Louis that focused on baby teeth. The results of that study say the same thing that activists in St. Louis have been saying for decades, that people who spent their childhoods near Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County have a higher than normal risk of developing cancer. We're going to talk with that lead researcher, but first I'm joined by St. Louis Public Radio health reporter Sarah Fentem. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Elaine.
So, Sarah, this study connects the St. Louis Baby Teeth Survey to a very active story in our region. And in fact, I spoke with activists just 2 days ago about how people in 21 zip codes in St. Louis are finally eligible for compensation from the government. But Sarah, can you help us to understand how it is we got here? Why was there nuclear waste in St. Louis to begin with?
Right, and I think that's something to point out because when you think about the mid-century nuclear program, the Manhattan Project, a lot of people think about the Southwest, obviously. Los Alamos Laboratory was there. They think of the University of Chicago. But the processing of the uranium for that project in part took part here, right here in St. Louis, by a company called Mallinckrodt Chemical. Mallinckrodt's a name in St. Louis we all know.
Yes.
And after that uranium was processed, there was a lot of nuclear waste, essentially, that was stored in certain sites around where Lambert Airport is now. And in some cases, it was even illegally dumped in certain places. And over decades, that nuclear waste has leached into certain parts of North County around, you know, Florissant, Blackjack, all of these communities up there. People who live there, people who've grown up there, have said, we are sick from this. And that's one of the reasons why we're hearing a lot about that now is, like you mentioned, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act has recently, just in this last month, been expanded to include people that were affected by that waste up in the St. Louis area and in parts of other parts of Missouri.
Right. When it comes to other studies, what were they saying about, you know, radiation fallout and then nuclear waste in Coldwater Creek?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so there have been a couple assessments done. The two that I'm thinking of in particular are from the State Health Department and also the federal ATSDR through the CDC. And both of those assessments over the past years have found that there is an increased risk. But I know residents there have told me they don't think those assessments really go far enough. It's really hard to prove how radiation over time has affected people. Or if you know anyone who's ever had cancer, there's always the question of what could have caused this. And there's a million different things. And so what I was saying is the thing that you can do is look at connections, and that's what these studies have done. Residents have said they don't think that those studies go far enough, and they don't draw as strong of a connection as they feel is there.
Yeah. This new study that's just come out this morning, it has some pretty damning evidence. What did it find, Sarah?
So this study draws some more connections in between the rates of cancer and living close to Coldwater Creek in particular. Coldwater Creek is one of the sites that the federal government has ID'd as being contaminated with this radioactive waste from the Manhattan Project. This particular study is really interesting because it used something from the mid-century called the baby teeth survey. And we can talk more about it later. But what happened was the researchers looked at childhood addresses of where people lived in proximity to Coldwater Creek in the mid-century in between the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and looking at over time, have they developed certain kinds of cancers and have they developed cancer at all? And what the study found is a connection between the proximity to Coldwater Creek, how close somebody grew up away from there, and the rate and the risk of cancer, and not only just cancer, but certain types of cancer like leukemia, breast cancer, thyroid cancer that are specifically associated with radiation.
Mm-hmm. And this was something that was not only bringing attention or eliciting attention from those in the scientific community or mm-hmm. in the areas where people were being affected. But in the 1960s, the results of the baby teeth study made an impact on a global level, including with President John F. Kennedy. Right. And you can hear it in Kennedy's 1963 speech to the nation in support of a ban on nuclear testing.
Even then, the number of children and grandchildren with cancer in their bones, with leukemia in their blood, or with poison in their lungs might seem statistically small to some in comparison with natural health hazards. But this is not a natural health hazard, and it is not a statistical issue. The loss of even one human life, or the malformation of even one baby, who may be born long after all of us have gone, should be of concern to us all. Our children and grandchildren are not merely statistics towards which we can be indifferent, nor does this affect the nuclear powers alone.
And that was President John F. Kennedy speaking in 1963. So as you noted, Sarah, America's children and grandchildren were being sickened by radiation. And we're still learning about how that happened through that baby teeth survey. And it's now been 55 years since it ended. And this brings us to today and the release of new insights from a Harvard study of those teeth. And the results corroborate what activists in St. Louis have been saying for decades, that people who spent their childhoods near Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County, that they have a higher risk, higher than normal risk of developing cancer. So as we promised, we have another voice to add to this conversation to talk about this new study and what it tells us about the impact of radiation today and in the 1960s. We're joined by Harvard professor and researcher Mark Weisskopf. Mark, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hello, thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Mark, you are the lead author of this study that was published this morning by JAMA. Talk to us about your approach to this and why it was that you used the St. Louis Baby Teeth Survey.
Sure. So it goes back a little ways, I guess. I'm actually a neuroepidemiologist, a neuroscientist by training. I have to say right up front that cancer is not my usual focus of work. And I had been working for a long time on trying to address questions of very early life exposures and late life cognitive health. In that process, I had come across the possibility of using teeth as a marker of what people were exposed to in very, very early life, even in utero. I had been sort of trying to do work along those lines when I just sort of really rather randomly got introduced to somebody who told me about the early baby tooth survey that you referenced a little while ago. And that about 20 years ago, somebody had sort of opened an old abandoned armory that I guess was WashU property and discovered 100,000 of the original teeth that had been donated in the 50s and 60s, which all of a sudden I realized was a treasure trove in many ways and could help me with the kind of work that I was trying to do, which was related really to cognitive function and dementia and decline in older age. But what happened is through the process of trying to take advantage of those teeth and find the people who donated those teeth now in their 60s and 70s, we were doing that and recruiting people back in, and folks were very excited to keep going with that kind of work. I, at that stage, knew nothing about Coldwater Creek, and what started the process was that many of the participants themselves started emailing and calling me and our team and saying, you ought to look at Coldwater Creek, and enough of the folks did that I started to really listen to them and say, what's going on here, and started to ask around and dig around a little bit more and discover all the sort of background you had been just talking about, and realized that these teeth and the people that we were recruiting back to our study would give us an incredible opportunity to ask some questions that really hadn't been asked before, mm-hmm. that would allow us to do something that hadn't really been done. So that's when I said, even though it's not my main line of work, we really have to do this, since the people keep raising this as an issue.
So it sounds to me, and this is reporter Sarah, this sounds to me like the baby teeth were sort of like a portal to find people and ask them questions about this particular connection that you found in this. And so just to be clear, you weren't actually studying the teeth. You were using the teeth to look at people's addresses during childhood. Is that right?
That's right. In other studies, we're using the teeth. But for this purpose, we really weren't funded to do this work, and it costs a lot of money to try and analyze the teeth for radiation exposure. So we said, let's just, as a first pass, let's ask this question that people have been asking. If folks lived near Coldwater Creek as kids, not as adults, what is their risk of cancer later in life? And then the folks that were rejoining our study who had given their teeth many years ago, we asked them to fill out a survey on all sorts of health information and other information. So they had been telling us, these people, what their cancer history was. So we could use that information collected literally on a 3x5 index card back in the 50s and 60s, giving the child's address at the time he or she donated a tooth, and simply say, okay, what does it look like if you lived closer to Coldwater Creek versus further away?
Right. And so that I'm going to just rewind really quick for listeners who might not know about the baby teeth survey. Really quickly, what was it and what was it looking for? I understand they in St. Louis, researchers collected hundreds of thousands of teeth. What was that all about?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it was an incredibly famous study, and the origins of it really were sort of what was being referenced in the John F. Kennedy clip you just played. And it was the atomic era and the development of atomic bombs and the concern by many people, sort of community members all over the U.S. Really, it's a little bit chance that this particular project happened in St. Louis. It just so happens there were a few scientists that really took this idea on, and the idea was radioactive fallout from bombs when they get detonated. Is essentially elements that are radioactive. And those elements, if ingested, can be incorporated into the body. And one of the prime places they can be incorporated is teeth. And the advantage of teeth is that once incorporated there, they just stay there. It's like a little fossil record of what happened. So people said, well, we're concerned. We know that there's this fallout. Some people were saying there's not too much of it. It really isn't much of a big issue if you're far away from the bombs. But other people were saying they weren't quite so sure about that. What happens if it drops down on the grass and the cows eat the grass and they start to accumulate the radiation? They produce milk and babies drink milk. People could get exposed, and maybe that's happening. And so it was proposed early on that if folks collected teeth, they could measure the radiation in the teeth to get an idea whether children in St. Louis were showing signs of radiation exposure, even though they were thousands of miles away from where the bombs were being detonated in the West. Mm-hmm. And what they, in fact, did show, especially after hydrogen bombs started being developed and detonated, that the levels of strontium-90, radioactive strontium in teeth, went up dramatically. And it was that evidence that led to John F. Kennedy signing that partial nuclear test ban treaty. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a very quick break here, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation. We're talking about a new study published today in JAMA that presents new evidence showing people who lived near Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County as children have had a higher than normal risk of developing cancer later in life. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation about a study published this morning in JAMA Network Open that affirms, with new evidence, that people who lived near Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County in childhood had a higher than normal risk of developing cancer later in life. We're talking with the study's lead author, Mark Weisskopf, who's an epidemiological researcher at Harvard University. And also here is STLPR health reporter Sarah Fenton. Before the break, we were talking about the results of this study, Mark. Was there anything about the new findings that surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, the sort of strength of the findings and how high the excess risk of cancer was among children who lived within a kilometer of the creek as kids was rather striking to me. I was not sure what to expect when we got started with this, but it was a very striking signal, and one that we saw with reports of any cancer, and one that was even stronger when we limited it to what's typically considered to be radiation-sensitive cancers. So part of me going into this thought that this population, even though close to 5,000 people that we were looking at, sounds large. It can be small for these types of studies, and so I was not convinced we would be able to see something, but the pattern was quite striking.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been other studies on this claim, you know, whether people living near Coldwater Creek are getting cancer because of their exposure to radioactive waste. Those other studies, though, did not come to the same conclusion that yours did, Mark. What do you make of those other studies?
Yeah, sure. So you referenced them before. There were two of them, one from ATSDR and one from the state of Missouri, and they took different approaches. The one that was closest to the kind of thing we did was what the state of Missouri did. And I think one of the fundamental problems there that a lot of the community members raised after that report came out is that they were looking at cancer rates among people who lived around the creek. I believe it was around the 90s. So it was people who lived there then. And while, yes, there was radiation, I mean, people come and go. And so one of the key questions that everybody wanted to know was not what's the risk if you live here now, but what is the risk if you lived there as a kid? In general, with sort of toxicant and environmental exposures like this, children are much more vulnerable because they're developing much more rapidly. And that was not a question that the Missouri study could address because they did not have the childhood addresses of the people in their study. ATSDR took a very different approach. They sort of did measurements of radiation in the creek, did a lot of back calculation estimates of what the radiation would have been back in the childhood of the kids, did some assumptions about how much interaction with the water they would have, and used other published data on radiation exposure and cancer to sort of estimate excess risks of cancer. So it's a very different approach, and it's also got a lot of sort of assumptions and modeling aspects that, you know, could be subject to error if they're not getting them quite right. They did suggest there was a slight increased risk, but they generally felt it was on the small side. And when we tried to sort of estimate the same kinds of numbers that they were estimating, based on our results, we estimated many-fold higher cases of cancer, excess cases of cancer from living close to the creek.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's really interesting about this particular study, like you said, it's looking at childhood exposure, and that's also before a lot of the cleanup efforts happened. I know here at St. Louis Public Radio, all of our reporters have covered just how incredibly difficult cleaning these sites up is. Like, you know, you have to you know, like, basically clean dirt. How do you do that? You know? And so that's, can you talk a little bit about that particular part of this study, looking at going back so far? Why was that important to look at?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, that was the one piece that really pushed me to want to do this study, because I realized that we had data and the opportunity to specifically ask that question because of that original baby tooth survey where, you know, kids in St. Louis, and frankly, it was got so famous they sent in teeth from around the U.S. and even internationally. But we focused on folks living in the St. Louis area. And when they would donate a tooth at age 7, 8, 9, a 3x5 index card was filled out at that time with their address. So we knew where they were as kids, and that was the important question that hadn't been answered before, right? If you lived there, because some of these people whose teeth we have and whose address I know when they were a child are now nowhere near St. Louis, so they wouldn't have been caught in the Missouri study, for example, because they've moved to, I don't know, California, Montana, something like that. So, but we know that. So we know where they were as a kid, we know where they are now, and we know what their cancer history was. So it was really a unique opportunity to get at sort of the key question that was still there after those two studies that you referred to before. And so it was something that was too important to ask for me to not turn to it, even though, as I say, it's not my main line of work usually.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, one of the things, you know, we're talking about children and childhood, we're talking about families, and you have a personal connection to this story through your grandfather. He was a physicist who worked on some of the earliest tests of the atom bomb and was working around people like Robert Oppenheimer. What, if anything, did your grandfather tell you about that work? And did it influence some of what you're doing now?
So that's sort of this incredible aspect of this study. My grandfather was one of the physicists on the Manhattan Project, worked with Oppenheimer and others on this, on the development of the bombs, and actually was one of the first to leave the Manhattan Project and became an ardent anti-nuclear advocate for most of his life, even was a co-founder of the Union for Concerned Scientists about these types of issues and the threat of nuclear war. In terms of this work specifically, I mean, he was a huge influence in my life, and it is by why I'm in science and why I do what I do. He passed away many years ago, so he was not he did not influence this specific work. And I have to say, I guess it sort of took me a little while before I even sort of realized this sort of synergy, or whatever the word is, the sort of connection. I mean, I knew he was part of that project, and I knew the teeth were collected because of concerns of what was coming out of the bomb. And it took me a while, but when I did, it in many ways felt quite good. I felt like I was sort of completing a circle in some way, and that it was very important to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, today, Mark, is exactly 80 years since America's first nuclear weapons test on July 16th, 1945. In your view, what are we still learning about the true price that we in the present are paying for that breakthrough?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still learning a fair amount. I mean, a lot of our understanding of sort of health effects of radiation exposure come from pretty high exposure settings, typically bomb survivors, in fact. And so there's, I think, still a lot of question out there about lower levels of radiation and what the potential health risks are. And part of the reason for that is that it's not easy to get good measurements of exposure and wait long enough to be able to see what types of health outcomes occur. But I think one of the things coming out of this work for me is that this seems like a very important question that needs much more work to better understand, because I think there are certainly still scenarios out there today where people can come across radiation exposure, even if there isn't, you know, direct exposure to an atomic bomb explosion. There are other radiation sources of exposure, and these are things that we better understand. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot more work needs to be done in this area.
Now, in April, our producer Danny Wisentowski interviewed a man named Jim Gaffney. Jim grew up in the Wedgwood area in the early 1960s near Coldwater Creek. And as an adult, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma as well as cancer in his blood, bladder, and bone marrow.
I know the uranium had to be made for the bomb, but the careless handling of it afterwards is the problem. And then that was the cover-up when they found out it leaked into the creek, and then they kept it out of everybody's. They built Wedgwood after they already knew it. But the builders didn't know they were building on toxic waste.
And that was Jim Gaffney, who grew up swimming in Coldwater Creek in the 1960s. Mark, Jim is from the same area and grew up in the time frame that your study covers, and he has these serious forms of cancer. To what degree of certainty can we say that that cancer is a result of the radiation?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's one that is at the crux of the difficulty of going between individual clinical medicine and population health studies like I do in large groups. It is, as I think was alluded to by Sarah maybe earlier, you know, it's very hard. There are many reasons why people get cancer. So for any one individual, it can be very difficult to say exactly why. This is why the types of studies we do, we look at large populations. So we're able to say, on average, when we see these exposures, there are more cancers that come out. And so if we can eliminate the exposures, we could reduce the number of cancers. It does get hard in any individual person to say this cancer was absolutely from this cause. However, given the profile you just sort of explained for Jim, that certainly seems suspicious to me. And I think the likelihood is probably high. I can't say specifically for him, and that's one of the problems we have going from population data down to an individual. But certainly at the population level, there are more cancers that seem to be showing up in people living close to the creek, and it sounds like Jim fits the profile for that type of cause.
And that's been one of the difficult things about getting compensation for people that live in this area, right? Is because it's so hard, like you said, to draw a connection because of one, especially if you're exposed as a child. There's so many other things that you're exposed to, especially if you're growing up in the 60s or the 50s, you know, like it's incredible that people made it through. So my question is, what can residents do, if anything, with this new information beyond feeling, edified that there's another piece of evidence that what they've been saying all along is true? Can this open the door to any kind of compensation? Or I know that obviously we've seen the RECA expansion this month, but what comes after this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the biggest outcomes and important outcomes that can come after this. Although, actually, obviously, RECA was the compensation has come back before this paper actually came out. I was hoping it would come out much earlier and contribute to that. But I think that's one of the most important things that can come out of this is saying, look, you know, we think this is going on. That's great, and other people can say, well, is it really? I think this type of evidence says, yes, absolutely. We can talk about the fact that there are certainly limitations to the work that we did, but it certainly raises a very strong red flag and says that it does indeed look like what these community members have been saying for many years is in fact true with data, right? And that on a large level, this does seem to be happening, at which point I think you don't ask whether an individual is that the absolute cause. The fact is, stuff was put in that creek that has led to many people to have cancers that they shouldn't have had. And so I think it's appropriate that if people grew up near here and were exposed to that, that they receive some compensation. So I think that is one of the things that can happen now. I mean, I think it also, you know, I think, I hope it helps people in the community feel better that they're getting some answers, that, you know, they've been saying this and not having the question asked directly, and that having that answer, I hope, will help in some small way. But certainly the amount that it can sort of validate this idea that compensation should be given, I think, is also a big positive from this.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the compensation, there has been recognition, right, acknowledgement, mm-hmm. that what activists have been saying, activists like Don Chapman, whom we spoke with just the other day, have said. And Mark, I understand that you have worked with local activists like Don. What is it like to have those interactions? What does that do for you as you pursue your research?
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendously important for me, and I feel really honored that both Don and Karen of Westlake Moms were willing to talk with me and tell me their story, because I mean, still for me, I'm many miles away from St. Louis, and I'm dealing with data on a computer. So in many ways, they're giving me what is really going on, the reality of things and the lived experience. And so I think it's hugely important for people like me who tend to deal just with numbers to actually also understand in a much more deep way what's happening on the ground. And Don and Karen were tremendous in giving that to me and explaining what is going through people's minds, what have people been dealing with, and what have they been experiencing there. So mm-hmm. that was very special for me.
And Don sent us a note to say, quote, "We are very thankful that he took the time to look at those responses. We trusted him enough to make sure that people could share their story with him." So as we look at what has happened in this last couple weeks with the expansion of RECA, you know, the conversations we've had on this show with activists like Don Chapman and Karen Nickel, who were the co-founders of Just Moms STL. Mark, you received many responses from people whose teeth were donated. How is it that you're going to now move forward? What comes next?
Sure. So, I mean, there are many things we're doing as part of our work around those teeth, some of it neurological, cognitive, trying to understand whether early exposures affect late life cognitive health. But with respect to this study in particular, I mean, I will say that, right, as we've been talking about, what we've done now really is just said, if folks live near the creek, what is their risk of cancer later on? And so the sort of exposure we're looking at is, in reality, is simply distance to the creek. It isn't specifically radiation, and that's because that takes a lot more money to do and a lot more funding, but I think it is actually still important to do. We can actually use those teeth, and we're trying to develop better ways to do this and make sure that we can. But what I'd really like to do is move forward measuring directly the radiation in the teeth, so I don't have to say how close did someone live to the creek. I can look at the teeth as a little record of their radiation exposure as a kid, and then link that to the risk of cancer later on. Also, at this stage, we've just asked people about their cancers. We would like to be able to go back and also get medical records, sort of confirm the cancer, understand when it started, things of that sort. So that's one thing that I would like to do, is do it in a much more detailed way, but it's going to require more funding to do. The other thing is that one thing we are doing now that we've started is to look, try and match the people that have donated teeth a long time ago for death records within the United States to see about deaths. Because so far, our study is only dealing with people who are still alive who may have had cancer. But of course, many people have died from the cancer. So we're trying to look at whether, again, residential distance to the creek is related to overall mortality and mortality from cancers and other causes. So that's another direction we're going. And lastly, in terms of that current national death index data only starts in 1979. So we're also concerned about childhood cancers, but I'm trying to see if there are ways to identify any of these original tooth donors who may have died as children and see whether the risk of dying as a child from a cancer or some other outcome was also raised.
Mark Weisskopf, thank you so much for talking with us all the way from France.
Sure, my pleasure.
Mark Weisskopf is an epidemiology researcher at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the lead author of a study published in JAMA this morning that presents new evidence that people who lived near Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County during their childhood had a higher than normal risk of developing cancer later in life. Sarah Fentum is STLPR health reporter. Thank you both for joining us today.
Anytime.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.